Peter Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
compound problems. Sounds a boring podcast, but I assure you it's not. A compound problem, as opposed to a simple problem. So a compound problem has got multiple moving parts. In general, it's a compound problem is you've got one problem and another problem, and together they seem insoluble, and they probably are. And in general, the thesis is to try something else or look elsewhere. Given that if you can't solve compound problems, they sound insoluble. So a simple problem is, oh, I stubbed my toe, or I've run out of milk, or something like that. A compound problem is a little bit more difficult, and it's something I suppose I got used to. I sort of tripped into it by studying mathematics. Now, the sort of a look and feel for compound problems. The first one was a multivariate. The same problem, a single problem, but the information is fuzzy. And and the revelation here is it can be solved, or there is a strategy rather than just guesswork. So the story takes us back to World War II, obviously. Every story goes back to World War II. But the Americans were getting in all this story about casualties, and they got various sorts of information that it was probably a 5% chance it's this. We've got this much, and they've got all sort of very vague information. And as they got the vague information, they could paint out areas of probability which were definitely, it was definitely not happening. So it was a way of going forward. And for me, that sort of was one aspect of compound problems. And this is diffuse answers. So the solution's there, or the problem's there, and it's diffuse, and you get a general gist of idea, and it slushes out. Now, it automatically means that if you're going in for a simple problem has a simple time scale, a compound problem has a time to actually absorb information. You have to get to know the problem over a period of time and slowly white out areas. It's sort of similar to a murder investigation, where you look at the different suspects and use probability theory and concentrate your efforts where it's most likely to be worthwhile. It's pretty interesting here. I'm just coming home from Katoomba. I haven't got my son. He's been sick for a few days. I haven't been here for a while. And spring is in the air. And it's obviously a bit, in terms of time since dawn, a lot brighter. So it's still very early, it's still very sleepy, but the light's here. Okay, so that's one aspect, one mathematical aspect of a compound problem. And then there's complex causality. Rather than, we've been sort of really taught the way that you do a scientific problem is you control all variables, you vary one, and then you see what goes on. Now, the situation is that that's in an experiment. In real life, you wind up doing frontier analysis. You only have one lever to pull, and then you have to wind up, you measure all the other variables and see how they're correlated, how it correlates with it. And so essentially, by controlling one variable, you constrain the other variables to be in sort of a cloud, a frontier. And there's also another sort of thought of reducing the space. Gee, the world feels so different. Space, time, and motion here with the light here. Okay, I'll be with you in a second as I stop here. I'm just having a look at where I'll be going. So That's the other aspect, frontier analysis. I'll be back. Thanks a lot. Going back again, we're looking at simplex algebra, which I probably have done a disservice by explaining it too quickly, and then going on to frontier analysis. Now, the big take-home message about these two aspects, one is that a few people, say, in industry and I suppose an industrial statistician would definitely know about it, would know about that. Very few people know about frontier analysis because we tend to be the takers of information sets and sort of rather than the makers of it. Oh, it's hard to say. We tend to think, oh, well, if I want information, I'm going to have to pay for it rather than extract generalized information. And this is all about strategies to extract information, solve problems, and your analysis of the of a problem. A problem is a problem, but a problem is a problem to you if you don't have a solution to it. I think that's a major point that you can say. So I just want to go back to simplex algebra. So essentially, you have this complex multidimensional space. You've got constraints, which is the answer is less than this. The answer is more than that. The answer is probably this and stuff like that. And you therefore do an exclusion paint. You paint your exclusion thing where the probability is the is the largest, and then you get a constrained object, a object to solution space, and then you can optimize within that by finding the optimum point in your solution space for it. And now, in terms of visualization, it certainly becomes, when you're talking about fairly complex things, it becomes very hard to work out what the heck you're doing. Sorry, I was just waiting for someone to come around a corner. It's hard to visualize. I sort of remember doing the assignment problems on it, and it was a lot easier. You had I think the classic one was someone with a fruit pop trying to work out what strength of cordial you put in a fizzy pop and with different markers and stuff like that. The US used it for estimating casualties in the Pacific, whereas I used it to a certain point when looking at fairly complex. My children had this particular form of cancer. The cancer research, there was a lot of papers about it, and there was specific knowledge which was important to me. The papers said different things, and you had a series of conclusions that you had to make, and the operations, you had to make a decision on a weekend, you know, that shortest period of time. So it's unlike this system where you're building a house, you just go out for quotes and you do research and then you go with your gut on it. You've got a limited amount of time and to research, to respond. And this really responds, this is where we train consumers to solve problems by getting heaps and heaps of information. In a certain sense, that the amount of information available to us is making us information lazy, we can make a decision, and it's no longer luck. It's a lack of research. So it sort of makes us sort of paralyzed in terms of, I think people from the 1930s or like that would go in and just make decisions for fun and get it in. We tend to really slow it down. And it's sort of, so we think we can solve problems a lot more, but we're not as able to solve the diffuse, complex problems. And I definitely know that I would not have been as able to handle a complex problem like cancer treatments Working out several bits of mathematical that I had. Both a matrix involved matrix algebra. If you really dig down, simplex algebra, and there's something called a quality deployment function. That is where you say, well, we're going to have to build this. You work back from having to build something, and you work back to what qualities do you assess that you want for it, and go across. So you've got these two matrix solutions, but the take-home thing for matrix solutions, you need time, intelligence, and space, process time. If you don't have those, you can. If you deny people the intelligence, and you deny them the space, and you deny them the time, of course you can force them to do things. Ultimately, you're going to push people till they feel crisis. They're married to the wrong person, either in the wrong job, but they have to. They look through and they have a series of decisions that they make. And of course, this seat of the pants, stream of consciousness stuff is not what a matrix equation tells you. It's a matrix equation of simplex algebra and quality deployment things. These are where you put all the solutions down on paper and you go through and you look at the quality of information available and you have to make estimates and stuff like that. There's also things like project management, Gantt charts, a whole series of things that obviously you don't do. Yet, people sort of do in a sort of a random fashion. So it's a very classic thing where people, decide what school their kid's going to, but through a spreadsheet or something like that, which is okay. But then you've got your kid, which is a living human being. You could be doing that, or you could be out flying a kite with them or something like that. So this sort of complexity between the two, to be fair, there is this sort of strange thing where if you imagine a huge crowd, a busy shopping centre or a big open air mall in the centre of a city, people walking about, and sort of this person, everyone's in colour, and this person is in grey, separate from them. It's the idea that someone who has the maths, who has the ability to go ahead, and everyone else that is around is going, what, no, run, sort of like mad chickens about the place, sort of going off. You do have this isolation. And this is sort of another thing. So we've got those two matrix things. I do have frontier analysis, which I'm going to do, but this is quorum sensing. So bacteria on your skin may be okay, but they start to put out a small amount of chemical and that goes out and they suddenly change behavior and they act together. Now, they're individual bacteria, they don't think, their intellect is taken away from them and they think, they crowd think. Now, of course, if there is a bacteria that's decides it's not going to get in with the act, it's a bacteria which is not very helpful, and it's not going to multiply because it's not going in with the act. So there's sort of like a Darwinism of ideas, quorum sensing, quorum of ideas, Darwinistic ideas, survival of the fitness, ecology. You've got a whole system of things where the actual logic of what you're doing is actually diffused. It's in the marketplace. I was just watching this very famous orange giraffe. I couldn't work out why I couldn't see it. So this is a side thing. They put a big sign in the way going up. And so that's why I couldn't see. I was always concerned because of going up, driving up the mountains. I'm always going, I'm really much cue to sort of, not, I suppose you call it brain damage, but not being able to remember the sequence of things. There's a sequence of about 13 villages going up, and you've just got to remember them. And I go back and I say, I can't remember this village whatsoever. So it's a real big wake-up call to your own background processing. So this is a really important thing, that the people... So, given the mode of way majority of people think, they think on brain light, quorum thinking. They sort of judge in sort of a medieval fashion. They trial by combat, trial by sticking in your hand in hot water, or all these different things, which ultimately doesn't actually address a problem. You know, like if your maths is right, you'd be famous. No, that's not how I've solved that problem. I've actually solved it step by step, and here's QED at the end of it. That's the right answer, and it is a problem that no one else has looked at. Therefore, it's important. I'm just going through the conversations that I do have, and people go proof by trial of fire. If you were good, and I ripped out the paper and I burnt it, white smoke would come up. It's sort of, there's like no logic. But if you assert it as if it is true, as if this is a methodology, and it's sort of like this is a methodology everyone accepts to go ahead. So this sort of sucks people into the quorum thinking. You would be facing, there would be a quorum of people believing that you're the right way to go. So that sort of sense is that like a knowledge amoeba keeps people back away from these large problem-solving things. Now, big question is simplex algebra, is quality deployment functioning the right thing to do? It's really not the right answer, because it wasn't a right quite question, because you can do it badly and simplex algebra badly and get a stupid answer, and not going through Lawson at the moment, and you get a bad mark. Or you can get a good mark, and simplex algebra will give you a good place where to send your US troops, what cancer treatment, range of cancer treatment is ethically the best. And really, in a certain sense, that comes down to it, if you have simplex algebra and if you have quality deployment functions and all this type of stuff, and you can reason that quorum thinking, that is going to a magazine, listening to a talk show, all these things, if you understand this is not the best thing to do, you have to you're sort of ethically defined, because at the end of the day you've got a small US Marine attacking, you know, an overwhelmingly defended Japanese thing, or you've got someone getting the wrong cancer treatment and stuff like that, and there's no going back. You can't go back to say you sort of know the maths, you can't go back and say, it's good enough for everybody else in the room, they believe in quorum thinking, luck and justice and all that type of stuff. Okay, that's good. It just doesn't sit well with your soul. It's sort of like it really grabs your soul and takes you into new directions. Now, what I wanted to talk about is multivariate things. So most people, I don't know, that they extrapolate from a single case to a multiple case in a non-scientific way, or their extrapolation, when it doesn't fit, they introduce more faulty logic in the way they do things. So it's all very much one event, one reaction, the one event, one action reinforces the way that I used to live in the past and exerts my power in the future. So a manager is one person that tends to make decisions which at the end of the day makes the company profitable. And ensures a couple of things, that they're still a manager and you're still dependent on them. So if you this is like, it's sort of like your page of simple algebra or your mathematics is not trying to psychologically manipulate yourself and get a retirement fund and actually take over the place. A manager, a person as a solution, has all these other caveats in them. They're not going to make a decision which makes them look stupid, makes them question their past, or arranges a future that they're not telling you. So one of the interesting things of management, and so simplex algebra and quality deployment factor is sort of flipping over the knowledge coin, saying there are things we don't know, we handle lack of knowledge, whereas the manager handles lack of knowledge by making it a weapon against you. You can't understand what to do unless you negotiate and work through. The cost of doing business is the cost of never knowing the information because the manager has it. But what's more sort of spooky is that it's not the manager never knows it. They've got not the intellect or the understanding to know that they're making some random choices in a lack of knowledge. And there's this illusion that by applying bad maths. So if you apply bad maths to a badly formulated problem, you get a random answer. And there's a feeling that looking back, you say, oh, look, these random answers have led to a productive system. And what's happened is that over time, the other systems, there's a whole series of parallel systems which are responding to make things work. And it can actually be that your random management practice, which is poorly based on science and ethics. Essentially, look, if you have someone who is paid $1 squillion to look after themselves, they're not going to be ethical. I mean, is that not obvious? I can't see how that is not completely obvious in terms of, like, if you are paying someone $100 million, so they for every breath they take, every time they go to the bathroom, they're earning at 100 times the rate of someone else. It is just highly unlikely that they're ethical, and it's unlikely that paying them $200, 200 times, or $200 million is going to make them more ethical, or is going to make them out of their comfort zone. It's sort of like you buying in their comfort zone, sort of creating this artificial monster of companies, these companies which can't really think. So collectively, it's sort of like we're trying to actually solve the world's problems by having all these disconnected computers fighting each other and sucking up our power bills and programmers, and it's sort of like a madness. Now, one of the things I wanted to say about is the scale of problems. There is a problem solution, if we can imagine an ant trying to get across a paddock, a garden, and what's really important is the close problems and keeping out of the sunlight and keeping away from birds and doing all these things, sort of survival orientation for the ant. That's okay. And if the ant is really successful, it'll get across and be able to create an ant colony, and it's all very small. It's a different thing for a big deer or rhinoceros. If it's really successful, it will be able to create a big path, or be able to start to eat up all the resources, and what's going to happen is that you're going to get a crash in the situation a lot more quickly. Now, the thing is that if you sort of read to the young deer a whole series of stories about, oh, the ant did this, the ant did that, and you have you give them a whole series of thinking tools to help them deal as a citizen, when you then create this monster sort of Voltron citizen, which is a company which is capable of ripping up a whole region, taking, removing, you know, 30 metres of topsoil and then 500 metres of coal and just shoving that into the atmosphere. That's, you can't actually give that person, say, look, we're going to ask you all as little individuals to make a decision on this based on a whole series of stories we've told you about Mr. Ant crossing a field. It's sort of a much larger problem. And in a sense, these larger problems really are the stuff of simplex algebra and complexity coming across. Now, that being said, like, I can see people have this limited ability to solve this problem. I'm very much aware of myself having a limited ability to solve problems. But this is this really interesting thing in that in this very competitive environment, this quorum sensing, you can easily be put excluded from the quorum. We're one voice, you're not dressed properly, you don't speak in the right way, you don't move in the right thing. It's not that your voice can be heard, you have to go to a particular soapbox, dress in a particular way, put on Nike shoes, get backing from Rupert Murdoch and all that type of stuff, and then you can operate. And then if you go into that system, you have people selling soap boxes. If they see someone not standing on a soapbox, they just quietly put them away. And look, this person who wasn't standing on a soapbox has not done very well. Look at this. Let's buy some more soap boxes. So this being said, this is just really irritating me. Oh, far out. There's a car trying to join the traffic, and there's a speed, and it's going around. That would just freak me out if I had to. I'd just drive 1,000 kilometres away from that situation. So there's a lot of politics investment in terms of keeping people, keep it dumb, keep it quick, keep it dumb, keep it quick, and this quorum logic. Now, of course, mathematics and a long period of time, mathematics takes a long time to, you obviously can't be a flighty, you can't be a flighty person going to mathematics outright. So automatically there's this selection. The problem selects the solvers, the people who can solve it. If that makes sense? Or the solution complexity selects people who can do that, and selects personalities that can do it. So little by little, as you've got quorum solutions, that is, do you look good, do you speak right, are you in the right circles, do you have the right social network, and all this, that entire network, and that's selected a certain type of person. The actual mathematics is actually doing the same thing, but selecting another type of person who can slowly go ahead. Now, of course, this is really interesting for me with the stroke and rehabilitation stuff, is that if I was a quorum person with a stroke and stuff like that, I would go, oh, everyone, can you help me? Can everyone really support me and all this type of stuff? And if I was really good and I had a really good connection thing, people would come around and support me. And, that would be a great thing. And I would regrow back into a quorum person. Now, the opposite thing is that if you've got these quorum thinkers, and part of quorum thinking is basically bashing up anyone who's not on a soapbox so you can sell more soapboxes. Oh, God, you're scaring me, bike person. They're doing that. They've actually thought, oh, well, you're down, and it sort of makes sense because you're not a quorum person to actually physically crush you. Make sure that you don't get any support, that at every turn your tragedy is multiplied, which is okay. And sort of as a mathematical thinker, you're standing back and saying, oh, well, that method of solution definitely is not going to work for me, but it can't work at all. And the reason that they're not solving anything very productively by actually crushing you, it's actually best to actually revert to this mathematical thinking. Now, one of the things is mathematical thinking, yes, there is numbers, there's abstraction, stuff like that, but there's also attitude of complexity and time. So basically, there's this rigorous thing of, in one section, collecting the starting conditions, looking at the different methods of solution, time, and if the mathematical solution isn't there, it's not that it's not soluble, you just haven't got enough information, you haven't got enough skill or technique, you haven't... There's this entire thing which is actually pulls you away from quorum thinking, and if the quorum thinking isn't working, well, that's obviously not the way to solve a problem, is it? So, going back, there are these huge things of multivariate, long-term solutions. I did two of them, simplex algebra and quality deployment factor. So quality deployment factor is more what are the aspects of the solution I'm looking for, and how important is each other, and how does it go together, and getting a figure of merit to decide which way you're going, and then a figure of merit. I have almost a figure of merit for the figure of merit. That is, I've got a figure of merit that's got a figure of merit, a value of 39 out of 50 for what it's doing, but the actual figure of merit for the figure of merit is about 0 out of 100, or it's 100 out of 100. I can't quite describe it then. So there's quality deployment factions, there's the actual philosophy inside the mathematics of going ahead. And if the mathematics doesn't work here, you can see, oh, things aren't necessarily... you can see in terms of, I think, quantum physics, the ability for things to be... the numbers not to be counting numbers. I can't quite describe it. They're the idea of spatial things, things going through each other, things being at the same time. There's also this complex, multivariate nature, or a single space, multiple objects going through each other, they're in space. Now, the thing I wanted to talk about here is this other thing which I've come across, which is, I think, is rather interesting, because people talk about, oh, I've been through the Great Depression, I've been through World War One, it taught me this. I've been through this. Well, I've been through a few mathematical problems, and strangely, I've sort of communed with it. I've sort of sat in a laboratory, looked at the mathematical equation, and said, it really hasn't struck me until someone else has come in the room and said, that's rubbish. What do you mean? I was taught this. And they walk out again. And they close the door, and there's sort of a silence. And there's a mathematical equation. That's the way to do it. Let's settle up. Let's move on. And this is to be... to actually put it to you, there was a... I was treating optical fibres and heating up optical fibres so the metal in the optical fibres diffused, and so the actual intensity of the lens So an optical fibre is a long extruded lens, and you melt the lens or diffuse the lens such that the light inside diffuses out to the lens. Now, the other important thing is that optical fibres are quantum mechanical beasties. The actual light cross-section across it is a quantum mechanical wave function. There is not reflection, it's refraction, which is getting total internal reflection, but this is a refraction property which pulls it in. It's not off and on. It's not a surface there. This is one of the... It's sort of got quantum mechanics oozing all the way through an optical fiber. It itself is not a quantum mechanical object, but it's got all the quantum mechanical maths, the maths in it. Now, I used to heat this up with a flame using barbecue gas and oxygen, sort of something very close to my heart, in that my heart has got a valve made out of the carbon produced by this process. So this is something which is sort of so eerie. My optical fibres I used to treat, and I could actually create this layer on the outside of this carbon, and these optical fibres I would coat with carbon fibre coating that the Americans developed for the surface of their cruise missiles, or their intercontinental ballistic missiles, their nuclear reactors, and for these heart things. So this is a bizarre process. But in the production of this, I had to actually... what happened is that you could heat it up very quickly, but if there's too much oxygen, or I think too much oxygen, yeah, it would actually burn off your... fibre, and your fibre would reduce and shrink. And that's one of the things that you require in a fibre is mechanical integrity. Or if you did the opposite way, carbon would grow up and would actually swell up and become brittle. And then through all of this process, you get a variation in the mode field diameter, how evenly it actually expanded. And we were getting impossible expansion, 100 microns. So to just give you an idea, an optical fibre has seven micron mode field diameter, and then I can expand it up to a factor of 100, 120. And so your light coming out of your optical fibre wouldn't be this huge splay, it would be this... like a laser beam coming out of your optical fibre when you did it properly. And now, for all this, we had things like time, oxygen content, gas pressure, and stroke method. We had all these things, and this produced a slew of results on motor field diameter and width. And what would happen is that you would get a very large motor field diameter and a small width. It would winnow out, you didn't want that one. Or you could get a reasonable motor field diameter and a too small motor field diameter and a large, the optical fibre's okay. And there's other things. And so you had these parameters, and they were varying anyway, and you have something to set for it, and you'd be able to measure these multiple things. And what would happen is that the robots would be working on this throughout the night, and in the morning you would have your quality chart, and instead of a single point as you have in school or anything like that, you would have a frontier. And that was interesting. And I don't come into the lab and do one thing. I build a robotic system and actually get it to produce large amounts of results, and I can see a frontier. And this is frontier analysis. And do you think I could tell my staff about it? No. I was the mad person. I was a quorum. But eventually I was able to fill customer orders and produce it. So, and look, it was just such a nightmare to produce here. And, of course, reduced money. Now, it wasn't until with that it was sort of like this, I didn't really think about it that much. I didn't think of it in a philosophical term going forward. Then I began to teach. And I got the data back from tests. And then there was this thing of quorum sensing. We've got to provide, you've got to provide a single mark. What's the mark? The mark has got to create a behavioral change. What? We've got to get all this person's marks. We've got to pull them up, average them, put them in a ranking system, and then you make your product feel good or bad to change their behavior. At the end of the day, the reason for the mark has got twofold. One is to for us as a system to place it, place someone, and people to try and steer their placement in the system by the mark. So the mark has become actual physical part of the process, which is okay, which is a bit weird, but that's a why it's happening. Now you can imagine that the education system is quorum sensing central. Now this sort of gets into, I might be able to do compound problems before I get here. I'm sort of getting home pretty quickly. I feel sort of, it's so hard as you're talking. So as I talk, my ability to sense where I'm in the journey drops, unfortunately. So I remember as I was thinking about this going up to Katoomba, my ability to register places or think in a parallel way has dropped. I get the students' marks. I would basically let the data speak to itself and would produce it on a multivariate thing. So I'd have multiple choice long answer and another thing from a single test, and then that would come up as a three-dimensional. So your simple thing is, here's your test, here's, you've got 20 out of 100, here you've got 80 out of 100, rank. Oh, okay. Rather than do that, I've got all the different aspects of the test and mounted it on a 3D axis and then rotated that in space, but then coloured the actual points, boy, girl, and stuff like that, and then rotate that to look for frontiers, as you would do in geostatistical data. That's probably another example of where you've got very expensive, very intrusive data getting. So you just can't sort of press a button and get geological data. The data comes in, has to be interpreted. I just wonder what's happening here. I've just got to work out where the heck this is. Oh, this looks as though we're completely stuffed. I'm just trying to work out where in the Blue Mountains we are, but it's not a healthy sign. We're in traffic for the moment. This is frontier analysis, and for me, I can sort of, thinking back, I can see that you've got it's not just the solution system, it's the personality with the solution system, and people are trying to, as if they're trying to get the solution to manage the people, and therefore, if I'm trying to get marks and produce results, which therefore manages a social thing, it therefore makes sense that in order for that to work, I necessarily have to manage the people who are creating solutions. So I must run a system where the teachers must produce one type of solution, which produces one type of behavior. It's all a little contained solution, orbit solution thing. Now, whether that little system goes off and runs off a cliff, it doesn't matter, because I'm going to have a certain amount of lifetime. It's going to move us closer to a cliff and go off. And so I don't have this entire sort of limited space thinking. So I think that's perhaps one of the aspects to... I definitely know that when I showed, more people looked over my shoulder and looked at things, and I would say, oh, look, how come the boys can get a larger spread of marks, that is low multiple choice and high long arts of things, and it's like this. Whereas the girls, if you rotate it, they've got the same distribution, but you can rotate, and you can see this clear delineation line. There's actually no girls in this space whatsoever. You know, how come that's happened? Is this statistically important? And they just flick off and look away. There are certain aspects for when people did an assignment, and then I would turn and show them the logic process, the logic flow diagram for it, they would look away. It wouldn't be important. And so this is sort of very much sort of part of the story in terms of looking at your way you find solutions as part of a bigger problem set, trying to actually go into it. So just sort of beginning to... I suppose this is the next frontier of mathematization. So we start off, I think this is pretty much the way it goes. This is, there's no one running a course on how you solve mathematical problems, because in quorum thinking, the idea is that you need a quorum, and the quorum has got to be artificially constructed in a certain way, that you've got, it's a party political thing. You have to actually only fund quorum thinking. That's a sort of slightly twisted, and the reason you do that is that quorum thinking has this pollution. You know, oh my God, now let's see what the time is, 8:40. So it's gonna be a little time to come home. You can imagine all this caused, like, each person in this traffic jam is costing probably their company $100, something like that. $100, a few thousand dollars worth of lost productive capacity here, and a flow-on effect of, you know, I just can't imagine. There's a bike just roaring past us. So you can see the way that I think. So there's this complexity that... what we're really coming up against is a method of solving things, of solution finding, by killing off people who find solutions that don't suit you. So therefore you wind up with the only solution, and it works because anyone else who loses, takes another solution, is strangely knocked off. It's sort of like the mafia or protection racket. And I really do think things have become almost a parody of things. Now, what is it? René Descartes was, oh my godfather, there's sort of the red, the blue and red flashing lights up here. Some poor sucker, probably like myself, tried to pull out in front of a car or something like that. You know, probably had some sort of brain thing. It's all the imagination. I'm just thinking, again, looking statistically here, if I'm a statistical point and I'm ahead, there's bound to be other people who are ignorant of it. The major thing is that you've got this philosophy thing. I've just got to see this person up here is beginning to change lanes. I'm just looking at whether that's necessary. You can see there's a truck up here. Yeah, it's just that people are ignorant of their own ignorance. I don't know whether that's... I think I'm doing the right thing. The cars are doing... in terms of people are ignorant of their own ignorance. Okay, and that's clearly true in terms of that. Essentially, if you take the politics out of everything and just make it a mathematical problem, there are certain mathematical things, if you gave them a problem, they couldn't solve it on the the page. And at the end of the day, there is their ignorance. It's just mathematically true that people are ignorant. I just wonder what. I'm just going past this truck. The police are here. There's about two police. I don't know what the heck they're doing, but it seems okay. Oh, let's have a quick look. Yeah, we're off and we're back there. Yeah, we've got this complex thing of ignorance and a system of enforced ignorance. That is, you keep someone ignorant, you don't train them how to actually, be an officer. And this is another thing in that... I suppose years and years of officer training is that you have to move someone from a process of ignorance framed thinking to ignorance constrained thinking. So dare I say, in the management I've seen, it's ignorance enabled thinking. So keeping your staff and keeping everyone ignorant of what you're doing, you enable yourself, you give yourself more license to act outside a process or ethics or anything like that. So ethics is a constraint, process is a constraint, so you're using ignorance as a way to go ahead, whereas ignorance constrained thinking is that I know there are certain things I don't know, so I have to accommodate that. Ignorance is a risk. It's hard to say that. That's taking ignorance as an opportunity, whereas ignorance is an area that you simply don't know. The answer, ignorance is an area where the answer possibly could be. I think that might be almost a mathematical definition. And the answer could be there due to, there's two things which constrain your ability to know. So ignorance is an area you don't know, and it could be the optimal solution, which sort of operates in a different space, which allows you to go in a different direction, could be there. And there are two basic ingredients, probably three ingredients to it. One is the knowledge, two is the know-how of the knowledge, and three is the psychology to get there. Now, of course, it's almost like a dichotomy. If you are ignorance enabled, you want to enable the ignorance to get what you want by ensuring that the ignorance is not managed. The ignorance is a management tool, and you don't manage it yourself. To go ahead. I hope this sort of makes sense. So let's get back to it. I don't know about... Look, majority of people don't use maths in their thinking and process. And it is... if I can say that, maths plus stroke equals some semblance of solution. Now... and the sort of the other thing is that I should explain sort of optimization. That is that you have a series of choices. You can do nothing. You can do something which might be effective. You can do something which might be effective and give you social context or information to go for. Definitely in strokes, you sort of look back and say, oh, my solution capacity's dropped right off. You look at a page of maths and you say, oh, it's giving me a headache. I can't do that anymore. But you've got to... whereas people who have a quorum sensing saying, the quorum sensing is more... lack of capacity. So what happens is sort of like rounding up sheep with a sheepdog. The You can train your sheep to be deaf. You know, put a whole lot of earmuffs on all your sheep, and so the dogs can yap all they like, and the sheep just simply won't respond. And there's sort of a sense of that's essentially what education does. It puts innovation earmuffs on sheep, and so when you want to move forward, now the thing is that they have flopped this big thing. We've abandon you, we're not going to contact you, we're not going to provide any support for you, and you have to rebuild yourself from scratch. And it means that if you're rebuilding yourself from scratch, or and you're looking at the process that you're going to go in, you may as well take a BHAG thing, which is going to clear out as much mathematical groundwork as possible. And so this is why starting from just before Christmas, last time, you take your soldering iron and simple 70s components and just set out. It's sort of like you're on the edge of a desert and there's sort of Mount Fuji at the other side of this desert, I don't know, and you say, and you get a little water bottle and you say, well, we're going to set up there. And it's not about getting there, it's about the exercise you get in doing it there and your little vista. So you walk up, you struggle up to a tiny little sand dune of a hill. I'm only doing this because I'm about to reach home. It's so amazing. Sorry, the amount of hazards which I don't know whether I shudder to think. I don't know whether going man with the bike there, you'd be fully aware of how you'd know you're alive if you're cycling up here in the Blue Mountains. You know you're alive because you could be very suddenly dead. There's sort of like, I was going to finish this off. You know you're alive. There's sort of two ways you can know you're alive. You can know you're alive because there's French waiters giving you the best food and everyone's telling you that you're fantastic and it's a great day. Or you know you're alive because you're just nearly going to be shot all the time. People in combat describe this this feeling of intense life, and it's sort of like this bizarre idea of being intensely alive because everyone's trying to kill you. And so if I can say that's my real sense of being alive, really happy to be alive, and you know, even the little things I get intense enjoyment out. I think I'm just discussing with the veterans, that's something, I don't know, I haven't expressed that very well. So you've been with me on my ride back from Katoomba, and I've tried to explain a little bit of the philosophy of maths, and myself, I am myself a quantum mechanical wave function going multi-dimensional into the future, and people are using classical physics to stop me, and they might be able to collapse my wave function, but I'm going to go on maths, building robotics, what's it, rehab on steroids. I am almost on steroids, the amount of effort I'm putting in. Thanks a lot for listening, and catch up with you next time.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.